Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori. We've always thought that the most compelling story strikes the perfect balance between an honest look at the mess of life and the humor that can be found in the mess. To be perfectly honest, we don't really know how to live life without both the humor and the authenticity.
Our podcast might be a little bit of whiplash at times. We can spin from hard and deep to humor and laughing on a dime. The hard will be really hard, and the truths we share are the ugliest of humanity. We don't intend to make it seem like it's all fine or to pretty up the pain, but we also know that the joy we found is all the more profound because of the pain.
So we hope you can stick with us through the ugly, because there will also be joy and hope and humor. Welcome to The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door. Welcome back to our podcast, The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door. Kate and Lori, we're both here. This is part two of the two-part series, Hopeful and Afraid. So in this episode, we're going to talk in more detail about what it feels like to the survivor to kind of walk through a more private, non-law enforcement-based investigation. So we've been talking about what criminal investigations feel like, and I really want to make sure we highlight the important difference of criminal investigation. Beyond a reasonable doubt is an appropriate burden of proof, but out here in the regular world, even in civil lawsuits, that is not the burden of proof. It is preponderance of the evidence, 51%. Like, that's all we're looking for here. So that's the criminal side, is a high burden of proof. Out here, not the same thing, but still, even other kinds of investigations feel a certain way to the survivor. And that's what we're going to talk about next. So we've talked about churches that need to hire independent investigation firms to wade through these kinds of things. Honestly, with the chapel, pretty early on, there were repeated requests asking them to hire someone to help them know how to navigate through these waters, particularly since the people who are alleged to be involved were very much at the center of leadership in the church. We thought it was very understandably important why there should be some neutral party who was trained to do these things. But unfortunately, they did not. The chapel should have, but they did not. Instead, they kind of tried to go figure it out for themselves. And, you know, if you listen to that episode, you know how that went.
At this point, I feel like they just kind of like prayed and hoped it goes away.
I think they're still hoping that we're just going to go away, but we're not going away. And I hope that other people are out there are making it clear to the chapel that, cover your ears, Kate, because it's going to be churchy talk, right? Repentance is a thing, right? And so if, you know, you did it wrong, turn around and do it right. Claim it that you did it wrong. So I hope that people are out there still putting some pressure on the chapel to acknowledge that they did it wrong. Sorry.
That's okay.
Okay.
Okay. So the type of investigation that we're talking about is really less like the criminal investigation, in that it's really for the church to address the allegations, who should be removed from leadership, to address their policies and procedures to continue to keep people safe going forward. You know, that's really what we're about to talk about, yeah. I guess.
And those are good things.
Those are all very good things. And what we have been really seeing, like you said, the chapel should have done. But an investigation like that, while still needed and good, just like we said with the criminal investigation, there is a time and a place when that is necessary and required. It still puts the victim through yet another investigation. Even when an investigation is done with the best intentions and the best trauma informed and the best people and the best, most trained, you know, I have no more words than best, but there, it still feels super exposing and vulnerable. You know, like we said earlier, sexual abuse or assault versus a different kind of crime. Those are the, you know, it's the most private parts of you as a person that are being now investigated.
Just imagine how it feels to have your most shameful, terrifying experience put into a document for whoever to read. Right.
Yeah.
And the survivor is supposed to just trust that it will be treated with respect and sensitivity. But often, I mean, honestly, if you were just assaulted, that just recently has been your experience, that you were not treated with respect and sensitivity.
And then like for Kate, her experience has not been that her experiences have been treated with respect and sensitivity. So why would someone assume that that's how that would go?
Right. Yeah, I just end up feeling scared and mad and embarrassed, honestly. Like, is you're right. Like, imagine having all of these things just out there, not even out there, but just on paper that a stranger has put together who doesn't know me from Adam. Who did I ever tell you that story? Oh my God, ready? This is such a squirrel in traffic moment. Okay, Patrick went to see a I can't remember what kind of doctor it was. It doesn't matter. But his name was Dr. Adams. And then in the conversation with Dr. Adams, Patrick said something like, I don't know you from Adam. And I like died laughing, like dead, like literally like embarrassing in the corner giggling because I am like, so, and he's like, you are so dumb. And I'm like, I know, but like, cause his last name is Adam.
Actually, Adam.
Like, I don't know him from Adam.
Wow.
Do not cut that. It's a great story.
Okay. Has to be there. Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay, but then so you end up feeling scared and mad and embarrassed about something that is supposedly a good thing. So then what?
Right. So then I feel crazy because it's like, well, this is supposed to be helpful and this is supposed to be good and this is supposed to validate. And so what's wrong with me that I'm not just happy and grateful and, you know, everyone around me seems to like expect like, oh, good. Like I said, oh, good. Hey, no one can see my hand gestures, but you know, they're doing an investigation. Wonderful. You know, people expect that. Don't you want that? Again, if you have nothing to hide, if you're telling the truth, then what's the problem? But it's way, way, way more complicated than that.
Right. Hopefully that's becoming evident.
Yeah. I mean, even just going through the investigation process and telling details of my experience, you know, we have a podcast. Yes, we've put the information out there publicly, but Lori and I have very strategically, if you go back and listen, not shared a lot of details. Like we have really kind of given a broad stroke picture with a few details sprinkled in just to not validate, but
just to give, I mean, there has to be some, we understand some information to round out the reporting.
But there's a lot that we choose not to share. So now to have, again, a stranger come in and ask questions, probing questions, you know, asking for details of specific memories of specific times of abuse. Like that's a lot. That's, you know, uncorking a bottle of feelings and memories, you know, that I didn't choose to uncork.
Yeah. I mean, the box is open,
right?
We've talked about the boxes. So now, I mean, again, if you've listened to the podcast, you know, you've probably heard it in Kate's voice that there are times when a box started to open because we talked about a little bit of extra detail. And she has to quickly close it because that's how we keep the process going, the podcast process. So to do this kind of investigation and then require the boxes to open fully so that the details can be shared, like that's a high price to pay.
Mm-hmm. There's like a ton of fallout with that. I mean, you know, again, anytime that we have dealt with law enforcement, it's like, yeah, it's like ripping bandages off of a burn wound or something. That's like, you know, ugh, that was a gross analogy.
No, but it's true. The fallout. Yeah. And then there is the how out of control and terrifying it is. Because again, if you've never been involved in an investigation, you maybe can't really appreciate the fact that once you crack that open, like it's really hard to walk back. Mm-hmm. Really hard. And now you feel kind of caught along in the process mm-hmm. of, oh, wait, now this person wants, now, the, you know, the same nurse now wants us to call the police and the police officer that shows up wants us to call, meet with the detective. Oh, and the detective wants us to meet with the advocate and.
Right.
And now am I?
Well, and this is the same thing with these other kind of investigations. It's like, it's not in my control. So they're, you know, it's a, like a bunch of questions and then there's more follow-up questions and there's more you know what I mean? Like there's just always, and especially on this type of scale, right? I mean, we're talking about decades and decades and like just men and people upon people and, you know, do they really get it? Are they really trauma-informed? Are they capable of understanding and dealing with the enormity of this?
I mean, especially in this situation, that's yeah. true, right? Like we understand, like, unfortunately, we were told that there's been a record number of sexual assaults in the area over the course of COVID. Like, we know that that's true. But that's still not the same scope that we're talking about here.
Yeah.
And so there's constantly that question of, like, I don't know, is this person really capable of grasping mm-hmm. what we're talking about here?
It also leaves me feeling like, am I the one in trouble? Am I the one being investigated? Because, you know, similarly to a criminal investigation, like, let's use the Matt Araiza thing, right? He's walking around signing NFL contracts, and she went to the hospital, had the rape kit done. Her social media is being looked into. She's having all kinds of things torn apart in her life. Is he? Maybe, but you know, it feels like, am I the one that's in trouble? Because that's also been my experience.
Well, because it's often one of those he said, she said things, right? I think the survivor feels like they have to prove that they are a reliable reporter, not a liar, not crazy. And so then, yeah, you do end up feeling like any wrong turn and I could be discredited.
Right. Yep. Which is not fair, because I didn't do anything wrong, even though it feels like, you know, am I the one that's in trouble? I know adult me in my head knows that I didn't do anything wrong. But then why is the burden of proof on me? Why am I the one that has to walk through this? Why am I the one that has to go through the investigation? Why am I the one that has to answer these questions and detail the abuse? And why am I the one that has to go to the hospital and have the rape kit and sign the releases for all of my medical records so everybody can see everything about my entire life? Why is that burden of proof on me? The investigation should be, in any investigation, into the men who are the offenders. You know, but oftentimes that's not the case, especially in these non-criminal investigations that we're going to talk about.
Right. So even though we understand the necessity of this process, it's still not fair.
It's not.
It's like saying, like, the grass is green. It's just a statement of fact. It's not fair for the victim to have to be the one who is on the hot seat. Mm-hmm. Not fair. And then there's the, how many times do I have to do this?
Right.
So it takes kids telling several times, I think we've heard up to 8, in order to be listened to. 66% of victims don't even tell until their adulthood. And the average age of reporting sexual abuse in childhood is 52. Like, okay.
Yeah.
And Kate has tried several times.
But it's a super trapped feeling, because it's like, we can't not try. We can't not do it. We see the necessity of it. And yet... it's shitty. There's just no way around that.
Right.
It's just shitty. So the reason that we're doing this episode today, and so we can talk more specifically about it, is that one of the local churches.
Not the chapel. Just
not
saying.
The chapel.
Want to be very clear.
Not the chapel.
In case there's any question. The chapel did not do this. Should have, didn't. Just saying.
Oh my God.
Okay. One of the better local
one of
churches.
One of the better local churches that has been, you know, increasingly doing it right by all accounts, has hired an outside firm to come in and kind of investigate the allegations. Much of the abuse took place in this church building, as well as many of the offenders attended there. In trying to do this well and in trying to have a correct response, the pastor and the elders of this church have decided to hire an outside firm to come in and investigate and to give the church kind of some guidelines on how they should proceed based on the information that they gather and take a look at their policies and procedures and all of that.
Which is great. Those are good things. And we're glad, because we're all about safety in the church. Like, if there are people who are involved in Kate's abuse that are still sitting in a church pew and potentially have access to the vulnerable, we are all about making sure that that's not true.
Yes. Absolutely.
However, there's still all the ways that this stuff feels to be in the process of that.
Yeah. So we've had an opportunity to actually meet on Zoom with a couple of the members of the investigative team. Our first impressions of them are that they're trauma informed. The organization itself is very victim centric. They did take the time to meet with us on Zoom even prior to being under contract with the church, just because I was like, I don't know. It kind of came out of nowhere. And I know that you had maybe been talking with the church about it, but it kind of was like, oh,
it's happening shit. Now.
Like, mm-hmm. this is happening. Not oh shit, but like just I had a very old feeling response to it. Hmm. It was a very like,
I've been here before.
Like, I'm not like, this is feels a lot like Liberty. This feels a lot like this, the private school that I went to. Like, I just, I don't know. I had a lot of questions and I had a lot of,
fears.
Yeah.
Still have a lot of fears.
Yeah. So they did though. They took the time to meet with us and kind of walk us through a little bit of their process. Their process does allow for the victim to have as much power and voice as possible. There's a couple elements to the process, you know, just the timeline of it that I thought were, unusual and really in a good way, like just very victim centric. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, no, absolutely, and we're grateful for that, and that's the hopeful part.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But there's all these
the rest
the fears and concerns. So some of my fears are based just on, like we said, my previous experiences. They're old feelings, old, you know, reactions to things.
Real things. Like, these are not just, oh, I had a feeling because I don't know, but these are real things that happened that caused mm-hmm. feelings
yeah.
that aren't specifically related to this organization.
No,
but are related to organizations similar.
Right. It's not a judgment against this particular organization or who this church, chose to hire. It's just an acknowledgement of what the reality is walking through this.
Well, that any faith-based organization is going to make you nervous.
Yes. Yep. Because of the trauma with the church. And like I said, church people, church building, church words, God used against me, anything faith-based makes my skin crawl. To
Liberty,
be honest.
Christian school, the chapel,
mm-hmm.
this old church.
Yeah.
So much yep. hurt.
I had someone say to me a long time ago when I was a kid, I prayed about it and God told me that you're lying. And then I was in trouble and being examined and evaluated and
had to go to counseling.
Yeah. And which those records were not confidential. They were, it was a whole mess. So yeah, of course I'm like, I gotta, I'm like trying very hard to stay in my like, okay, I know this is good and this, necessary and I don't have anything to hide, state, but the little kid parts of me and the younger memories of these things taking place are a lot of times winning out. We can maybe cut that.
No, I think that's important for people to understand that adult you has very rational, in the moment, practical concerns, hopes, but also fears. Mm-hmm. But then there's this whole other spin out that happens where, there's just old memories that get triggered.
Yeah. Whenever I've tried to do it right and went through all of that and it still didn't really make it better. So I wonder, like, is this going to be the same? We talked about like I'm going to the hospital and filing police reports. I've done all of that. I did all of that. And it got me exactly nowhere. So this is not even that, but it's again, that feeling of like, is this just going to be the same? Am I going to go through all of this? And then there still won't be any real help. I keep asking, okay, but what can this organization really do to help me? Because it's not a criminal investigation, because it's not law enforcement. It's, I'm not even the actual client here, the church is. So yes, they're victim centric and yes, they seem to care. And yes, I feel like they're trauma informed, but the real focus of the investigation is what the church needs to do about the offenders that are still in their building, and what their policies and procedures are going to be in responding to abuse allegations going forward. And again, that is a good thing. I'm thankful for that. I want them to have that. I have all the feelings about yay for them, but it still is an investigation into my life and my personal details, for their benefit. Which again leaves me feeling like the private details of my hurt and trauma are being rummaged through and heard and known for not a lot to be helpful to me, I guess. So because going through this isn't going to be able to put anyone behind bars. That's the reality.
Right. And while we know that this organization and the church, they are aware that obviously Kate's feelings and needs matter here, that isn't really the first priority. Mm-mm. Because that's not what they're there to do. They're there to assess the church, who's in the church that maybe isn't safe, and to help the church figure out what to do about that. Which again, not to say that that's not important, but I don't know how to explain like what it's like to feel like, I don't know, are you really even a person sometimes in these situations?
No. In this situation specifically, it feels like I'm just here and things happen to me and around me that really very much affect me. Like the boxes are opening. I'm the one that has to sit through the interview. I'm the one that has to give the list of names of the offenders. I'm the one that has to open the boxes and remember all the things and feel all the feelings and have all the triggers. And then the end of the day, I just have to kind of cope with that. I just have to kind of deal with whatever comes.
That's hard in the moment, but there's the added piece that I don't know that people who have not been traumatized, I don't know if you fully understand that being in that kind of situation that has some of the same elements of the abuse, it triggers old feelings of that was always how it was, right? The men didn't care about Kate, if she was okay or not okay. Her parents didn't care. Other family members, it was the same thing. Everyone else's needs and wants were more important than whether or not she was okay. And so telling those details and having that be the feeling like, okay, I'm not the priority here, can just trigger all that all over again. Mm-hmm. So not being a priority isn't just like, oh, gee, that's too bad. It actually feels dangerous.
Oh yeah. No, it definitely
And actually does. May be dangerous.
It's also not a one and done thing, which I feel like is important to highlight too, that it's not like, oh, okay, I'm going to have like one bad day with this interview and then we just like move forward. Like, I don't know what the fallout is going to be from this. I know what the fallout has been in the past and it's not good. It's not pretty. It's not anything that I want to go through again. And it's not just like, oh, that was an uncomfortable meeting. I wish I didn't have to do that. This is literally like, yeah, boxes that I've kept closed, boxes that I've closed and put away already that are now going to come back. It's just, yeah, you're reopening old things and it's just crappy. And then there's the element of participating in this investigation being potentially dangerous. The threats, you know, continue to come. They've known for a long time that I was talking about this. Obviously, we have a podcast. We're podcasters. But this is just like one more thing for them to use against me, one more thing for them to threaten me about.
Plus they're spinning all the more, right? Because now there are more direct threats not to talk, more running around telling people don't listen, like because they know that this could bring some credibility to the allegations and they don't want that to happen.
Right. It's also, it's been done in a more public platform. Like we are now talking about it on the podcast, but we are not the ones that made it on a public platform. Just the nature of how this investigation was made possible, made it a public thing. And so, you know, if you're hiring a private investigator or law enforcement is doing an investigation, I don't think they usually go around publicizing that. But this is not that. And so the way it came about was quite different than that. So that just gives them time, I think, to, I don't know. It also involves so many people, people who maybe felt like, okay, well, she's only talking about her parents so far. So I should be able to stay out of it. But now this potentially brings all of those people into light, which again, that's a good thing. But it creates a really scary place for me because, again, this investigation is not law enforcement. Not that law enforcement has been abundantly helpful, but it's not law enforcement. And so there's nothing this organization can really do to ensure my safety.
Other than gather the information and bring it to law enforcement with a bow on it.
Right. Which we need to find out, I guess, if they will.
Well, and you know, that I think, and back to the safety concerns, is part of what maybe the people who did this to you are hoping to stop. But mm-hmm. frankly, it's too late. Mm-hmm. All this stuff is already documented. It's a matter of now sharing it
right.
with
right.
the organization.
Right. And so again, that's the hopeful end of it, right? Is that mm-hmm. we have been inundated with information, inundated. Like our Instagram. I'm British now. Dear God.
We're embarrassing ourselves. Stop.
Stop.
Even okay. Silas is upset.
He's I know. Leaving. He's like, I can't. You guys out. Are so dumb. Anyways, okay. our Instagram message box.
Wow.
Is like constantly, like people are just constantly have constantly been, you know, providing details and like just peripheral, like we've talked about the peripheral puzzle pieces, right? Of what some of these men are doing or have done or are doing. And, you know, the running around, the telling of discrediting me, whatever. This organization is hopefully going to be able to take all of that information that we have to now offer and put it together in one place. And so like, that's a super hopeful part of this is like, yeah, that's a very good end result, but it doesn't take away from how hard the whole thing is to get there. To get to the end is still a tunnel that we have to walk through. That's going to be pretty shitty. So,
well, it's all the things, right? It's like, okay, wait, so do I have to tell all the details about all the people that were involved? That's insane. And then what if I don't, or I can't, mm-hmm. is this one more time that I didn't do it right? So now it's my fault that I can't get help.
Yeah. And that's like the whole, like, we, you know, we talk about the filing cabinet, like in previous escape attempts, it's always been like, here's this one file, this one piece of paper from the file. Let's see if it works. It doesn't work. So like, do I do that again, just to like preserve my own sanity and like mental health? But like that hasn't worked for me in the past. So no, I feel like I should do it right and give it all. But is that even possible? Like it's so messy.
But then even if you do tell it all,
right,
there's the question of, can this organization handle that?
Right.
Right. And oh, by the way, who can actually handle that?
Yep. I mean, yeah, we've read some of the old reports that they've done in the past with different churches and different, you know, organizations.
Very good.
Very excellent. Wonderfully done. But the level of complication, just the sheer number of offenders being named.
And the level of trauma.
Right. It's really not in the same ballpark. So it's hard to trust that they're going to be able to do it right. I will say that I feel like, you know, with anything, like when we started this podcast, saying the words human trafficked is really, it throws people because mm-hmm. again, everybody has a preconceived notion about what that looks like.
Even in law enforcement.
Oh, 100%. Yes. But like, you know, going to the chapel, I mean, it would have been, I think, even easier to just be like, yeah, she was sexually abused. I think when mm-hmm. we put that element in there and said people paid money for these things to happen, people made money off of these things happening, it's an element that just was like, no, that's not real. Right. You know? So is that going to be the same thing here? I hope not. But is it my job to educate them on this? Like, that's a whole complicated Again, thing too. Like,
that's not fair.
That's not fair. I don't really have the bandwidth to do that. You don't really have the bandwidth to do that. Mm-hmm. And yet if we don't, then is this just going to be an epic fail? So yeah, it's, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot to...
It is.
It's a lot.
That, and again, I think that's what it's important for people to understand, that any investigation brings with it that messy, complicated combination of hopeful mm-hmm. and terrified.
Yeah. And I think the difference here is that I, unlike the girl with Matt Ariza, this is not my first go around. So I have been here before. I have dealt with faith-based organizations. I have dealt with the church. And it has ended epically badly for me. And every time it ends badly, I pay a price for that, not only in the bright world, but also in the dark world. So, you know, it's very hard for me to just let go and let the process happen because I don't know. I don't really.
So again, there's the trapped is. Yeah. Like that feels like that would be just foolish to do. I've done that and that ended badly. But what choice do I really have?
Right. I don't.
And that is way too familiar in your life.
Yeah.
And that's not okay.
Right. So.
Okay.
Hey.
I don't feel like we can end this one like with some little happy quip.
No.
I don't.
I don't either. Because this is just going to be like a pretty crappy month ahead. But yeah.
Okay.
Thanks for listening. Remember to like us on Instagram, Facebook. I don't know. What else do
what
we
else
say?
Are we?
We don't have a good sign off.
No, stay cool, Buffalo. If you or someone you know is stuck in a trafficking situation and needs help, please reach out to the National Human Trafficking Hotline by calling 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP, H-E-L-P, to 233-733.